Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Since leaving the White House in 1981, Jimmy Carter has achieved more in his post-presidential years than any other president in American history. He has received the Nobel Peace Prize, published more than 24 best-selling books, and spoken out boldly and sometimes controversially on many of the most important issues of our time. His latest book is a call to action, Women, Religion, Violence, and Power. He has been disturbed at sexual slavery through prostitution, the custom of genital cuttings, child marriages and dowries, spouse abuse, the so-called honor killings of women, rapes, and what he calls the genocide of female infants around the world through abortion or murder because parents prefer a male child. Jimmy Carter was the 39th president of the United States. It is an honor to welcome him back to the roundtable. Thank you so much for being with us, sir.
A great pleasure. I'm glad to be with you.
I always love having you on the program. You've been on the show many times, and at some time I think I could be comfortable calling you Jimmy, but I don't know if that is allowed.
It suits me all right.
Okay, all right. That's very
no
nice. I have to say, you start off early in the book. You make a point, which I think is interesting, that you grow up in the Deep South and the ravages of racial prejudice are around you. And so often there are very carefully selected scriptures to justify that discrimination. And you make that case that's almost exactly what's going on when we talk about this violence against women.
Well, that's true. You know, when we had a separate but equal in the South, we would have very senior Bible scholars come to our church just to tell us that God had ordained that white people be superior to black people. And they would quote Cain and Abel and stuff like that. But then, in addition, they would say, well, you know, slavery was actually permitted in the Bible. It says for slaves to honor your masters and that sort of thing. But we're going up further than that. So what happens nowadays is when men want to be ascendant or have the highest positions of authority in a church organization, then they very carefully select verses that can be picked out of the 36,000 or so that justify their excluding women from some very key roles in serving God. So I teach with the Bible lessons. I teach Bible lessons every Sunday that I'm home, about 35 times a year in our little church. And when I get in a quandary like about that distortion, I go back and look at the words and actions of Jesus Christ, who never deviated in any way from equally treating women and men, and even exalting women far above what they ever had been honored, how they ever had been honored in previous decades or centuries.
You quote in the book Zena Anwar, founder of Sisters in Islam in Malaysia, "If women are equal in the eyes of God, why are we not equal in the eyes of men?" And that seems to be a question that you really try to grapple in the book.
Well, it is. You know, there's so many abuses throughout the world, and I'd say since most of the readers will be in the United States, particularly in the United States, we have a very serious abuse of women in this country, and it's basically unaddressed because the men kind of quietly take advantage of all the superior positions in authority and in pay scales and things of that kind. We pay women in this country about 23% less than we do men for the same work. And of the Fortune 500 companies, of those 500, only 21 of them have a woman executive officer, and she gets paid about 42%. Less than the average CEO in the Fortune 500. On the college campuses, it's one of the worst places in America for sexual assault. Only 4% of the rapes on college campuses are ever reported because the administrators of the university or the college, the presidents and deans and so forth, they don't want it to be revealed that sexual assault is taking place on their campus. So they counsel the girl, well, you got raped, But let's don't make a big issue of it. Let's don't prosecute the boy. And what happens is, according to the Justice Department, about half the rapes on all American university campuses are done by serial rapists who realize when they get on a college campus as a student that they can get away with it. And the same thing basically happens in the military. So this is what we have in our country, is low pay and deprivation of jobs and sexual assault without punishment. Those kind of things ought to be corrected.
And when you look at that situation in this country, and then you look at it as a global issue, I guess the seeds of the problem are universal.
Well, they are. You know, almost all the great religions, all the ones that I know, Judaism and Christianity, Islam and Hinduism, Buddhism, they all have basic principles that are very highly admirable and inspirational. You know, peace and justice and equity treatment and compassion for those in need, love. So all of those are very wonderful things. But when religion is distorted, then that what you say is certainly true. It's very hard to find a verse, by the way, in the Quran that doesn't say that men and women are created equally. But of course, there are some very serious problems. I think you mentioned early genital cutting, mutilation. And that's not ordained by any religious text. It's not ordained by any government. It's not ordained by any husband. That's something that's perpetrated on little girls by their mothers because they were cut or mutilated when they were little girls, and they think it's the same. It's the thing they ought to do. So that's what happens. And in fact, 90% of all the women in Egypt have been cut, of all ages. And in some countries like Djibouti and Sudan and so forth, it goes up to around 95%. Of all the females in the country have had their genitals mutilated.
I have to say, in reading the book and hearing you write about that, that it just seems inconceivable that this is ever that this could be done, that it could be allowed, and it could be done at the record numbers that it's being done.
It's true. It is inconceivable, and I hope that this book will make an impact. In fact, it's been a kind of runaway bestseller. I think it's probably been the best immediate seller that I've ever written. I've written 28 books, and this has been one that seems to find a niche among people that want to protect their little girls. And I have a lot of people come to the book lines with bringing their little daughters with them and say, I'm glad you wrote this book because I want to protect my daughter when they get to college or when they get in the military or when they get start looking for a job and so forth. So I think it's something that really preys on people's minds.
You have a chapter in the book about halfway through entitled Learning from Human Rights Heroes. What do you think we can learn from these heroes that ultimately can address this issue?
Well, you know, one of the groups of heroes that we deal with at the Carter Center are women heroes that have been coming to our center in Atlanta for the last 3 years to work on this particular project from which I derived the information that I put in the book. And they come from places like Malaysia, and they come from places like Egypt. And they are very heroic women who fight for the right of women to have full human rights guaranteed to them, the same as men. And if you look at the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which I kind of outlined in the front of the first chapter in the book, or first or second chapter, then you'll see that women are guaranteed in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which almost all countries have adopted now, completely equal treatment, but we just don't give it to them.
You write toward the end of the book, you quote someone that you identify as one of your personal heroes, Ila Bhatt, saying, yeah. I have faith in women. In my experience, as I have seen within India and in other countries, women are the key to rebuilding a community. Why? Focus on women, and you will find an ally who wants a stable community. She wants roots for her family. You get a worker, a provider, a caretaker, an educator, a networker, a forger of bonds. I assume that's where your optimism lies.
Well, it is, and the Carter Center's had programs in 80 countries around the world dealing with health care and agriculture and so forth. And what we find, we're going to a little isolated village in the jungle or in the desert, that the women have in the past been excluded from any sort of leadership positions. But we turn to the women there because they are the natural ones to help to improve the sanitation in the house, to improve the diet in the house, and take care of the children and also take care of the husband. And so we teach the women how to be the leaders in bringing about a reformation in the health care system for that particular village. And the women have really blossomed forth, and they found that they can assume very quickly positions of real leadership, and even the men defer to them because the women are the ones that will learn about the rudiments of health care and apply it to the village. And also, a woman, when you train a woman, say, in a village, she's pretty well able to go from one house to another with impunity. Whereas if you train a man, you know, he may not be let inside a house unless the husband happens to be there or something like that. So we've found that women are the key to any sort of improvement in the general status of a community.
You do, at the end of the book, I just want to note that you direct people to CarterCenter.org, and the name of the book is A Call to Action, and at the end of the book, you include 23 specific things that we can do and a call to action and what needs to be done. And it's very important to look at that both in the book and online. Again, it's Jimmy Carter's A Call to Action, Women, Religion, Violence, and Power. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Mr. President, I can't tell you what an honor it is to have you on the program, how much I appreciate the great work you have done throughout the world, and to spend time with me means so much. I thank you very much.
Well, that means a lot to me, and it's good to be with you again.
A delight.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is A Call to Action, Women, Religion, Violence, and Power. It is published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.